Hey guys, thanks for joining us for another episode of the OT for Life podcast. Today's topic is travel therapy, and my guest is Emily Ann Becker, and she is a travel occupational therapist who has already lived in 5 different states in less than 2 years. She shares her stories, experiences, and tips about working within the realm of travel therapy. And it's hard to miss the passion that she has for the profession of occupational therapy and just inspiring and helping others. And one more thing, I also wanted to point out, if you want to hear more occupational therapy podcasts, go check out otpodcast.com and the OT Hub podcast portal. They have a bunch of links to other occupational therapy shows. So definitely check those out and support our other occupational therapy podcasts. Let's jump on in and explore the world of travel therapy.
If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah. Welcome to OT for Life.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You have a good shirt on for the day.
I know.
Did you do that on purpose?
Yes.
How are you doing today?
I'm good.
Yeah? Do you have to work today?
Mm-mm. Well, paperwork, but...
That's a constant.
I don't think it's possible to catch up, but that's okay.
No, it's never possible to catch up. And I feel like whenever I get close, the next day I just get completely bombarded with stuff.
Five people. Yeah. And you can't go and do your paperwork because you have something else you need to do.
Exactly. Yeah. All that like life balance and like self-care and everything, like then that starts to get in the way and you're like, well, I got to take care of myself. So the documentation's just going to have to wait. Always. It's like a constant battle.
Mm-hmm.
Do you typically work on Saturdays?
Well, I was gone. I was out of town last weekend, so I worked to fill in for Monday because I was gone Monday. So.
Got it.
But I typically do pay. I just sit here and do paperwork.
It's a story of my life. I get it. That totally resonates with me.
Because if it's not that, it's working on like something business related or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I had a student one time that asked me how many hours a week I work. And I like looked at him and I was like, I don't even want to know.
Every moment I'm awake.
Maybe. Yeah, right? It's like, if you count my treatment hours, my drive time, the time that I spend preparing, like getting ready, packing lunch, washing toys, like all of that kind of stuff, organizing the car, and then the time that documentation and thinking about work and responding to emails and texting and calling clients and calling and emailing caseworkers and chatting with my employee. And what else do I do?
Everything. It's 24/7.
Yeah. You count all of that. I'm like, yeah. I don't even want to know. I'd rather just live oblivious and be like, yes, I know I work a lot. So what is going on currently in your OT life?
So recently, I actually decided to stay here in California for another 13 weeks. I initially was going to be done here in California in December, but realized it was probably hard to find a job at this time. So with the holidays, so I actually extend until February, and then as opposed to like trying to find something else and worry about the stresses of moving all my stuff, I decided to stay here till March. Right now I do home health therapy. I cover a bunch of areas. It's kind of like, what area do I not cover? The running joke is that I'm an OT for the state of California, Northern California. Never been to Southern California. One day I will go there.
Hopefully not in one day that you drive down and then drive back.
Right. The running joke is how many hours I'm going to either spend in the bathroom or how many hours I'm going to spend in my car, because that totals the majority of my day.
Yeah, I feel like we should elaborate a little bit more because I know that you drive a lot. And you said something of like just going to one client could be upwards of 80 miles to 100 miles, something like that.
Yeah, that was my last home health job, was up to 80 miles. But right now I drive like anywhere. But yeah, it can go from obviously the 5 mile ones that live 5 miles away from me to driving 80 miles to one patient, or it's 80 miles between patients. So like I could be in one place and it's really close to me, but then having to drive 80 miles to another patient, which every time is different because whether it's 30 miles or 80 miles, it could take the same time. It's just depending on which roads I have to travel, because I travel like these two-lane roads and whippy roads through the mountains, and it's quite peaceful. But then sometimes you get like tired because it's like, okay, well, after 5 minutes, it's like I'm bored. Like I normally listen to some audiobooks or music, or sometimes I just have to call someone because with all the driving, it kind of, I'm like a baby. Like you put me in a car and drive me and I'll fall asleep. There's no other way to get me asleep. But when you put me in a car and I drive, so it's good to have like the support of people, because it's hard, because like during the day, like everyone's working. So like who you're gonna call if you need someone to talk to keep you awake, it's kind of, so it's good that I have like support and I have a bunch of people that I'm like, okay, I need you to talk to me for 10 minutes just so I can get to my destination.
Do you have like a set schedule? Like, okay, at Tuesdays at 10 o'clock, I'm calling you.
No, because half of the time I don't even know where I'm going to be on the next day, the next hour. It's literally, I live literally hour. It's basically like within 30 minutes of each other, I don't know where I'm going to be. So everyone's like, what's your schedule like for this day? And I'm like, well, we'll see what happens when I get to that day. So it's pretty spontaneous.
Wow. I always felt like I drive a lot. And I think I do. Compared to a lot of people, I think I do still drive a lot. But in hearing you talk, I'm like, nope, I don't even drive that much compared to that. I feel like the longest that I go in between clients is about 25 miles. I'd say maybe 25 to 30. I don't think I've ever had to go over, say, 35. So going 80 miles to one client.
It's crazy.
Yeah, that is absolutely insane.
The problem is sometimes it's like the patients will ask where I'm from and I tell them, and then it's like I don't mind the driving and I love doing it, but it has to be sort of logical, and most of the time it's not, which means it goes with me being very spontaneous. And that's something that in the past like year has been one of my biggest things, to be more spontaneous, because doing home health or being an OT just in general, you have to be like on your feet, like think on your feet most of the time. But like as a travel therapist, I don't know where I'm going to be. I don't know when people are like, okay, well, how are the prospects on your next assignment? Like, where are you going to be? I don't know. Like, it's spontaneous. And I'm a planner. So it's really hard being a planner that you don't know where you're going to be. You don't know where you're going to be in an hour. You don't know where you're going to be in a day. You don't know where you're going to be in a month. Like, it's hard for a planner. So it's taught me as a travel therapist to be more spontaneous and more being like, okay, just go with the flow. Like, that's the biggest lesson it's taught me as being a travel therapist, is because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know when you're going to get the next job. And that's hard for a majority of people to be like, okay, well, I need to know, oh, I have a job, I have this lined up, whatever. But like a lot of it's like, you know, it's going to fall into place and everything falls into place.
I think that's really interesting because when you were first talking, I was like, yeah, well, day to day, hour to hour, like that's got to be really difficult. But it's not even just that. It's actually like placement to placement or rotation to rotation. So every 13 weeks, it's kind of or not even because you're planning before that. So it's almost like every couple of weeks or so, you're thinking ahead of, okay, where am I going to be next rotation?
And then you don't know if you're going to get the job or not get the job, or that you put all this money into something. Like I had, after my I started my travel OT in June of 2017, and I'm from Illinois, so I drove out to South Carolina, and I was their only OT there. This was my very first job out of school. I was their only OT. I drove an hour each way between buildings because I lived downtown. And I was supervising the supervisor for two buildings. First job ever, just thrown into it. And then I had a little bit of a break because they were looking for jobs. And I think at that point I was licensed. I don't know. Currently I'm licensed in 6 states. I think I was around licensed in that many at that time too. And they were looking for something. And they're like, how about Missouri? Because I was living in Missouri before I started, when I was doing my clinicals. And I had like basically the job like they wanted me. But in Missouri, there's a specific law that you have to supervise, or you have to be an OT for a year before you can supervise. And I was like, well, that stinks, because I had just basically been supervising everybody. And now in Missouri, their law is you can't supervise unless you've been an OT for a year. So then the drawing board was the next day or a couple days after that. They're like, what about Arkansas? And I was like, oh, that, it doesn't sound very glamorous, but I mean, it's a job that, sure, I'll take it. Skilled nursing facility in Arkansas.
It's 13 weeks, right? So if you hate it, you leave.
Yeah. So I had sent out for my license for Arkansas. And
okay, so wait, right now we have Illinois, South Carolina, and Arkansas.
Illinois is where I live. I've never worked in Illinois.
Oh, okay. So you weren't licensed in Illinois.
No, I've never been licensed in Illinois.
That's hysterical. I don't want to be. I like, in my mind, I would have just assumed that Illinois would have been the first one.
Nope. I have Missouri, but not Illinois.
Okay. So South Carolina, Missouri, and Arkansas.
Yes.
Okay.
But my Arkansas currently isn't active, but that's...
But at the time of this story, you had at least those three going on.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I had this job in Arkansas, and it was all good. They were excited. I had sent out my stuff for the license. Like, it was a quick license. It's going to be fast. The next day, after I had sent everything, they're like, our census is low, so we can't take you. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? Like, now what do I do? So I was obviously a little disappointed. And then I was like, okay, back to the drawing board. So I was just doing whatever, living in Missouri. And then by the end of that week, I can't remember like the exact details, but by the end of that week, they're like, what about Reno, Nevada? And I was like, sure, why not? So I literally had, I think it was like 10 days to get from Missouri to Reno, Nevada, and find a place to live and pack up everything and get there. So that was the biggest one that was kind of like very spontaneous, because it's like, okay, I've been sitting here. And sometimes there's a lot of, with travel therapy, it's too, like, you get the opportunity to work in a variety of different settings, but a lot of the times there's going to be like the basic ones. There's going to be skilled nursing facilities, and those are very common. I've worked in a couple skilled nursing facilities, and that's not my niche and where I like working the most. So I like right now love doing the home health, and I'm trying to get like a pediatric job or a neuro placement so I can work with like brain injuries and spinal cords. And it's nice because when you do home health, or even if you work in a skilled nursing facility, you get to see everybody, basically. You get to have those experiences, and you get to find out what your niche is.
So, out of curiosity, it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like a majority of the placements would be with adults or older adults within like the travel therapy setting. Or is it just, would you say that's just been kind of your experience, and there are pediatric jobs, but maybe just not as many?
I think I would agree with that. There are pediatric jobs out there, but there's not many. And then obviously those are going to get taken because that's a high market thing, I feel like. But that's the thing. So like there was, right after I'd taken a job in, where was it? Oregon. After I'd left Oregon, and then I came back to California, I got a listing for a bunch of pediatric jobs, and I was like, oh, that would have been nice to know about. It's kind of tricky because, again, a lot of it is like within 2 weeks of your last day or contract with a facility, there could be a job, and then there couldn't be a job, a pediatric job. Like, it's a rare thing. It's what's available at that specific time you're done, and you can't really plan for it.
Yeah, it sounds like it's timing. Like, timing is everything, and that everything pretty much has to line up. Otherwise, it's not a potential. If your job doesn't finish in time, or I guess if you wanted to sit around for 3 months not working and just wait for one to pop up, but you never know. It could be 3 months, it could be 2 days, it could be 2 years. There's really never like a telltale sign of when a pediatric job or any job that you are desiring to do could pop up at that moment. And then the other kind of factor is that it could be, you could be in Oregon and it could be in Florida, and you then have to get across the country to get to that job.
And that a big good example of that was when I worked in Oregon. Like, I was there, I didn't actually end up staying because it just wasn't the right fit. So I was off for almost 4 weeks. And I, at that point, I think I was licensed in 6 states, and it was really hard to find something. And like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do with myself? Like, I'm always working, I'm working, working. And now I did some exploring. So that was an opportunity to explore and stuff. But it's like, you don't know. And you just have to be like willing to expect unexpected things, because you can't be a planner. You can be a planner, but you can't be like set on everything has to be planned out, because everything in life is pretty random. Like, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen minute to minute, day by day. Like, you have to just be spontaneous.
Yeah. I think it's almost like you have to be ready to just take time off and be okay with that, or ready to jump at any moment, or a combination of both. Like, you're going to take time off and be ready to jump, but if you don't find it, then you're okay with that. I think it would be really hard to be like, okay, I'm going to be working X amount of weeks this whole year, because you just never quite know exactly when those placements will line up. And I'm curious, do you feel like, given the setting that you're in and being in travel therapy, do you feel like now that you've had experience, you've been doing it for a year and a half-ish, a little bit over?
Yeah. Yep.
Do you feel like that you are more picky about the placements that you pick up, or are you just still kind of give anything a try?
I find I am pretty picky with it, because starting in skilled nursing facilities and then finding out that's really not my niche. Now it's kind of like, I don't even want them to pitch skilled nursing jobs to me, because my passion is not with those types of facilities, and working in those facilities is not for me and the type of person I am. So they've been pitching a lot of home health jobs, and I'm like, well, right now I'm happy with the home health job I'm at. I don't really want to deal with the stresses of moving everything to move to a different location and then do the same type of job that I'm already doing. So yeah, you start to become picky towards things, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's more like you get to discover yourself and figure out what it is you like. Because coming out of OT school, I mean, you have your classes, you have your thing, and oh, going through OT school, you say, oh, I want to be a pediatric therapist. I want to be pediatrics. And then you go out and say you took a pediatric job as your first job, and you realize, you know, this is not for me. It doesn't work. But with the travel therapy, you get the opportunity to try the different settings and be like, okay, well, this doesn't work. I mean, you can do anything for 13 weeks. That's the other thing with going to the places. It's a great opportunity to like see the world and experience new things. And it kind of like, it's 13 weeks, but it goes by so fast. You're doing one thing, you're working. And then you're like, oh my goodness, I've already been here for 10 weeks. And where did the time go? And that's the part like I kind of struggle with extending where I'm at right now. In 2 weeks, I'm already done at this place. I've done a lot of things, but there's so many more things I want to do while I'm here. Then I have the opportunity to go see some shows I want to go to. My big thing right now is I really want to go skydiving and then go in a hot air balloon over the Napa Valley.
Ooh.
Those are my big things right now that I'm really determined to have happen while I'm here.
Oh, I can get on board with the hot air balloon. That's been something like on my bucket list for a long time. Skydiving though, nah, I think I'm good. I've bungee jumped before, and I bungee jumped when I was in Greece, and it was awesome, but I don't even think I could do that again. And skydiving, ooh, I don't know. I'd need some really big pep talks in order to go do some skydiving.
I don't think I could do bungee jumping because I'd be like, this rope, I don't know. What if it just, I think in my head, oh, the rope's going to snap. And, you know, I don't think I could do bungee jumping, but I could jump out of a plane.
It's
going to push me.
Total like random tangent here, but I just started listening to a new podcast for me, and it's called What Was That Like? Have you heard of it?
Uh-uh.
So basically this guy, he interviews different people and it's all about these crazy stories. And one of the ones I just listened to was this guy who went hang gliding in Switzerland. And apparently once he was in the air and off the ground, he realized that he was with the like instructor or whatever, the, I don't know what you call it, the driver, like it was two of them. And he realized that the person that was in charge of his safety hadn't hooked him in. So he literally was hanging on by his hands.
Oh no.
And I was listening to the story and I was like, oh my gosh, I don't think I could ever do that now.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's a little crazy. So I have, now we'll get back onto topic here, but I have so many questions about travel therapy because I've never done travel therapy before. I've had friends that have done it. And so I've heard stories, but I don't have any actual experience with it. And so a couple of my questions, one of them is, can you ask for specifics or like not ask for things? So if you only wanted pediatrics or if you only wanted home health, can you tell your company, this is what I want, don't give me anything else? Or actually to add to that too, if you only want it in a certain geographical area as well?
To answer your question simply, yes, you can.
Okay.
To give a more detailed answer, it narrows your possibilities. And if that's how you want to do it, then you're more likely going to have a lot of time, unless you want to be in a skilled nursing facility, because those are everywhere. You're going to have a longer time between contracts, or you're going to have to stay at your contract longer, because if you're very picky about it, it limits your opportunities. And then the other thing with it is you might as well just have them pitch you any of the jobs, because you can just say no to them. Like, it's better to like have all the opportunities presented to you than miss out on an opportunity, because especially with like doing the home health thing, like when I found out skilled nursing wasn't my niche, I was just like, okay, well, I don't want any skilled nursing. And the skilled nursing are everywhere. You can use the analogy those are your criteria. Like if you're searching for something, if you're searching to buy a house and you only want this price range, you want this many acres, you want this many bedrooms, and you want it to be in this spot, it's going to limit your opportunities, as opposed to if you don't have a geographic location and you want all those things. You can see all the houses, but when you put in that criteria, it search and it limits it. It's like if you're doing research, you want this, this, and this, and you want only these specifics, it's going to narrow it down, as opposed to having 10,000 articles to having maybe 100 good articles. It's the same type of thing when you're looking for a placement or having a job. And then you have to be very spontaneous, because there's jobs that come up and there's most people don't know, like it's kind of hard because you have to be very organized with it, because since I am licensed in 6 states, it was 8 states and now it's 6. I have my Excel sheet, like this is when this one expires, this is my number for this one, this is how much continuing education you need, and you have to be very organized with it. So then there's like the quick license, and those only, always the question is like, oh, this pediatric job came up, and oh, how long does it take to get a license in that state? So like the thing with Nevada, that one was, I think it was less than 2 weeks. Yeah, because I didn't have it. And then I was almost on my way there before I actually had it. So that's the other thing too. It's like, you may be like, okay, I have these licenses and looking in these states, but then it's like, oh, this opportunity comes up in such and such state. And it's like, oh, their license takes like a week to get. Sure, why not? I'd love to do that. Like, and then you're also competing with other people. So it's like, do they already have the license? Or I've had lost some placement opportunities because, oh, they're going to take a permanent person over a traveler. And that's the other thing. you have to be very, again, it's random, because I was at a place and one day I had what, Tuesdays and Wednesdays off. On Tuesday, they wanted to extend me for like a couple more months. And then the next day, on my next day, they're like, oh, we can only extend you for 2 more weeks. So it is, you can say it's stressful, but the opportunities of that totally outweigh it. Like, the worst part about being a travel therapist is, again, not knowing where you're going to go and making sure you have what you need and making it fit in your car and getting to the locations and finding housing. Those are the three things that are very, very hard about being a travel therapist. But the opportunities that you have to just see the world and see different things, like, I'm from a small cornfield country town, know that no one, even people that live 30 miles from it, haven't even heard of it. It's small and there's nothing. And to see like the opportunities that I never thought I'd live in California. Like, there's a whole world out there. There's a whole bunch of things to see and different experiences to be had. So I've been given the opportunity, like my first job, like, yes, this was in South Carolina. I had to drive an hour to work each day, both ways, but I lived like 100 feet from the Capitol. It was amazing. And then I lived in Reno, Nevada. Then I went to Sacramento. So I lived right downtown. So like, I got to bike places and it was nice. Then I went to Portland. And so I was like, most of the people don't even get to see all these places, or let alone live in these places. Like, I can say in less than 2 years, I've lived in 5 states, California twice, but I count it as another state.
Yeah, that's okay.
I lived in 5 states. And it was funny because a couple weeks ago, I was renewing my Colorado license. And on their license process, it asked you to list phone numbers, addresses, everything about all the facilities you've worked at. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is crazy. I've worked at 7 different facilities, 5 different jobs. So I had to put the addresses and phone numbers for all of them. And I'm like, wow, like in less than like 2 years, I've done all of this. And it's exciting to see all these things. And that's like my big goal is by 50 to have been through every state, like whether it wasn't not working, but like have traveled there or drove through the state, done something in each of the states, because I was like, it's the opportunity to like see the world.
So I want to discuss a little bit more about moving and housing and licensing and how that actually looks. Does the company that you're employed with, do they help you with the licensing procedure, with moving, and with finding housing?
Not really. You get per diem money, so you get untaxed money each week for housing and food. But most of the time, no, you're finding your own housing, and it's sometimes very stressful for housing because places, to find a 3-month lease is quite challenging. And then when you do a 3-month lease and you end up staying longer, that doesn't mean your place is going to be available. Like, I had an experience with that in South Carolina. Like, that was my first job and I actually had my own place. I was renting furniture 3 months, but I decided to stay there longer. So then there was one day I was actually at work and I'm like, when I go home, I don't have a place to go. Like, my lease is up. I don't have anything. So I ended up having to do like an Airbnb thing for a little bit, which is really hard when you have all of your stuff you own in your car, like packing everything up in your car. And then you kind of have to leave it there because you don't know how long you're going to be at that Airbnb before you have to go to another one because of scheduling and different things. So the housing is the worst part. So a lot of what I've done and the ways I found my housing is a lot of on Facebook, like the marketplace. It's kind of scary though. Again, like especially if you're traveling by yourself, you don't know these people and there's a lot of scams out there and it's scary. So like, because people are like, now you have the big thing in your head with Craigslist, like you're scared because of all the things that have happened. You have to be very open to a lot of things because you don't know what's going to happen. And that's my new motto with how I live each day. Kind of, it's like, I don't want to miss out on opportunities. I'm going to do random things. Like, when I was in Oregon at 10 o'clock at night, I drove to the ocean. Like, I'm going to do spontaneous things.
Because you could.
Because you can, and you never know when you're going to miss. You don't want to miss out on an opportunity where you could meet someone that could help you grow in some way. You develop friendships. You are at a specific location when a specific event happens. Like when I did live in South Carolina, that was when the eclipse happened. So, and when in South Carolina, that was full totality. So it went completely dark. So I was at the state capitol laying on the grass and I got to see the eclipse.
That's really cool. And yeah, I just like, as you talk, I reflect more and more on the opportunities, but also kind of, it can be a little like stressful. It can be a little like unnerving of having to move to a new place, having to find a place to live, whether you are like renting from somebody or living in somebody's room or something like that. And so it's like new places, new people. You don't know where within the city or the town, like where are the good places to live. And it's like all of these, I feel like I've comprehended the big idea of travel therapy for so long, but I never really went into detail. And as you're talking, I'm like, oh yeah, I never thought about that. Like I always thought, oh yeah, like you'll go to a new place, you'll get to see some new things and you'll meet some cool coworkers and some cool patients. But I never really thought about when you're not working, like what that actually does for your life of meeting the people that you're renting from or at the local coffee shops or like wherever you are, that kind of added opportunity for things to happen. That's really cool.
If anyone ever thinks about going into travel therapy, a lot of it is your personality and drive towards things, because I've been told multiple times by people I've met all over it, and they've been like, well, don't you want to just stay in one place, form relationships with people that are strong, and you're always all over the place, and you get a lot of like criticism too. Like you get to do this awesome opportunity, but you also get some criticism, and it's like, you have to be able to be outgoing. You have to be able to reach out to people. Like I do home health. I don't know half of the people I work with. Like I see them when they show up at the same time for a patient's house that I do on accident. Like that's the only time I get to see them. Like I've met the office people, but I don't get to see them. So it's hard, especially when you're doing home health, because you really don't, like our company, we don't have a lot of times where we meet up, and it's all a lot through like phone communication and email and different things like that. So you have to be able to be outgoing and form the relationships, and it's based on what lifestyle you want to have. When I live in Sacramento, there's this app that I used and it for finding like meetups and different things. And I actually made some good friends. I went and got to hike at like Yosemite, and I've always wanted to do that. So I got to meet people and I got to hike at Yosemite. It was actually funny. As we're recording this, I'm wearing this shirt that says Motivate. And there was a lady that she's from upstate New York, and she was there with her family and they were hiking. And I was with a group, but I was one of the slower hikers. And she was sitting on this rock, just reading her book. Like she's scared of heights and everything. And I was just talking to her and I was like, let's hike together. And she's like, I'm scared of heights. And I was like, we'll be fine. Let's just hike. Let's take our time and just have fun. And actually, she actually made it to what's called the Falls of Yosemite. And she's so scared. She couldn't even take my picture of me standing next to the falls because she was so scared of heights. But she made it to the top. Like I had motivated her to accomplish something she would have never done. She would have just sat there and waited for her family. And she kept telling me, she's like, my family isn't going to believe that I made it all the way up here. And I was just like, I'll take your picture. And then they ended up meeting up with me and they're like, cause they were helping me come down. Cause I ended up coming down by myself and I just ran into them and they're like, oh my, like they were just thanking me so much for like letting me help their mom get to the top and all this. And it was like, it just made me feel good. It was like, well, I was just going to climb there and try to get there myself. But now you get to see this beautiful thing. And I don't know. I've had so many good moments, and like getting to see and meet different people is an amazing thing. Like I've met people who were mayor, I've met people who are authors, I've met people who almonds for Blue Diamond, like I used to be obsessed with almonds,
And I actually got to, they have them in their backyard, and I actually got to see how they come off the tree, what they do, and then what the process is. And then I actually got a bag of almonds. I mean, it's a lot different because, like, it brings me back to where I'm from, because the cornfields. So it's like, you know where your corn's coming from. It's coming from right there.
Right.
Or, like, to be out in here in California and see all the fruit trees. Like, when I lived in Portland, or outside of Portland, like, blackberries, I got to just go and pick blackberries. You don't get to do that back in Illinois. You don't get to do these things. It's just every day is a learning opportunity. The thing is, the different types of, like, foods out here. So, like, I took a picture on my social media a couple weeks ago of a, it looks like a tomato, and it's called a persimmon. And most of my people that I know do not know what this is. So I literally posted, like, who knows what this is? Either they don't know what it is, or some of my family back home's heard of it, but they've never tried it.
Uh-huh.
So it's, like, the opportunity, because it's, like, I would have never seen a persimmon if I never did travel therapy. I would have never seen where blue diamond almonds come from unless I did travel therapy. Like, the list goes on and on of things I would have never done if I didn't have this opportunity.
Yeah, it's almost like you're growing in work and learning and getting exposed to all sorts of different occupational therapy realms and practice areas, but then you're also growing just in life and seeing things and learning about things and getting a chance to eat things or go do things or learn about things that you might not necessarily get the opportunity if, and if you are not in that geographical area.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. That I'm like, I want to go to travel therapy. I'm like so inspired now.
Well, it's funny that you mention I make people want to do travel therapy, because I'm telling people my story, even in life, about anything, whether it be therapy related or whatever I'm doing, I'm motivating people to accomplish their dreams. And that's the big thing about being an OT. Like, I get to motivate people to do things that they would have never done or get sad about because, oh, I had this injury or I have this illness and I can't do this anymore. But you can do so much, and there's so much you can still do. And it's kind of disheartening because there are other healthcare professionals that don't care. And it makes me sick. I was like, why would you go into something like this if you don't care? Like, patients have told me stories that, like, patients can really open up to me and tell me about their lives. And they've told me things that it breaks my heart. Like, someone did that to you, or someone treated you that way, or it just makes me want to help this world so much more and to change it. Like, I'm on the side of doing the OT, I'm wanting to do my own creative consulting to help motivate people to accomplish their dreams, to start their own businesses, and just giving them that first step. And that's the thing that's so amazing about occupational therapy, is that we get to motivate people to do things. That's why today I'm wearing my motivate shirt, because we get to motivate people to do things. Like, this is what these people need. Like, this is what people need in this world. They need that person who may look like a fool to everybody else, but is going to be there to motivate people to just do what they want to do and live the best life they want to live.
And I feel like, too, the people that are going to be motivated by your words and by your actions, they're going to think about that. It's going to resonate with them, and they're going to push through and do something with it. And, like, that's just kind of something that I've realized over the years of, like, I'm not going to be able to help everybody, and not everybody's going to want the help from me. Like, I might just not be the right person, but the people that believe in what I'm saying will be motivated to change and to do something and create something.
And I think that's the hard part about being an occupational therapist, because you do want to help everybody. I mean, right. You can't help someone you're like, ah, and it beats you up. But one of the big things that I was taught is your hula hoop. You have to protect what's in your hula hoop before you can help people outside your hula hoop. And you can only take on so much. Where in the perfect ideal world, you want to help everybody, you physically can't. And that's something I struggle with. It's like, I really just want to, nope, I have to do this, or I have to. the importance of just going to bed or actually to eating. Like, okay, I could sit here and do such and such, such and such. I mean, the paperwork, the work has to get done. But right now, I'm not, this is not productive. I need to go eat something. I need to go take a nap and then come back to it. Because in the end, you have to take care of yourself. Because if you don't take care of yourself, then you're not going to be able to take care of your patients. Like if I ended up, because I literally was stressing myself out, I didn't sleep, I didn't eat, I didn't do any of these things, didn't take care of the self-care, didn't go out and do these adventures, and literally just sat around and just did my work, I'd go insane probably, and I'd probably end up in the hospital not being able, and then what would my patients, or who would take care of them, who would help them? So it's like, I owe it to myself and to them, because I care so much about them, I need to take care of myself so then I can help them. Because if I'm sick or I'm not functional, I can't go out and help other people.
Exactly.
And that's something I've always struggled with.
Me too.
It's taking care of yourself. And that's something that's just really hard, because it's like, no, but helping other people makes me happy. Well, yes, that's true. But you can't make other people happy. You just have to keep it in the mindset when you get like that. If you're that type of person that, okay, well, what happens if you end up in sick? You can't help them. You can't help anybody. You can barely help yourself. So you need to get the mentality that, okay, I'm getting to the point where I'm going to be sick. I need to step back and work on myself and take care of myself.
Yeah, or burnt out or depressed or anything like that, where it limits and ultimately impacts the effect that you can have on other people. And I know I go through very similar things where I'm constantly like working myself to the bone to just do everything and help everybody. And it's been a work in progress to learn to say no to things and to learn to realize the correct clients for me to work with. And if they don't value what I'm saying, then maybe it's time for me to say, okay, why don't you go find another therapist that might be able to work better with you? And oh yeah, I totally resonate with what you're saying, because as OTs, we want to help everybody, and we will impact ourselves negatively in order to help other people. And that's just not the way that we should operate. And it's so hard to like catch yourself before you spiral into that kind of negative zone to say, hey, I'm working too hard, or hey, I need a break. I need to go take a nap. I need to go do this for myself before getting back to my work that has so much value and so much purpose to it. I wanted to ask if you had any tips for somebody who could be listening to this right now, who's interested in getting into travel therapy.
So the first step is finding a travel company that you want to work with, which is very hard. And for the most part, all the companies have the same jobs. It's just which companies, like you have different insurances, you get different money for continuing education, you just different things like that. But for the majority, they're the same jobs. So that's the one thing across the board when picking them. It's like, for the most part, you're going to have the same jobs. So that's not a big factor. It's just which company you kind of jive with. So once you have picked the company you want to work with, then while that's going in process, you have in mind which states you want to work at or where you want to start. You have a starting place. Like, I want to start in the Midwest. I have these states. This is where I want to start with because my family lives such and such distance away. They're by me. I can still start traveling, whatever, but I have family and I'm not completely going all the way out. When you're living in Illinois and you're going all the way out to California, like me. Completely all the way out there. But it's because, again, it's based on your personality. Like, I've talked to some people like, oh, I don't want to do travel therapy because I want to be by my family. You can see your family. You have time off. You can work in the areas closest to your family and then branch out. There's still opportunities.
I like that you mentioned that, because even though it's classified as travel therapy, you can still get positions potentially within the city or the town that you live. Because I have a friend that went and was up in Northern California for a little bit, but is from Southern California and ended up picking up a placement in the city that he's from.
And so I think it was like you just don't get your housing allowance or like there was some like logistics to it. But that meant that he could still be in the area that he wanted to be in and still keep his quote unquote travel role, except he really wasn't traveling.
So I'll explain. Okay. How that works.
Yeah, because I don't know.
Yeah. So you have what's called your tax home. So where you file your taxes, where that's your home. So my tax home is in Illinois, where my parents live. That's my tax home. So I, for taxes, anything I'm paying towards other states or while I'm temporarily living there, I'll end up getting back in my taxes. And then I'll have to pay Illinois taxes. Where I've never worked in Illinois, and I really don't plan on it, I pay Illinois taxes because I'm an Illinois resident.
Got it.
So with the housing money, how they give that, most companies, I'm pretty sure it's all of them, you have to be over 50 miles. Like your placement or where you're going to be has to be over 50 miles from your tax home. So
okay.
I could basically, there's where I live in the cornfield. So basically everything's 50 miles from where I live, but I could work in any of those places as long as it's 50 miles. I think that's across the board. Don't quote me on that, but that's from who I've talked to and worked with. You have to be over 50 miles from your tax home to be getting the housing money.
For clarification, it's the facility, like where you're working, right? So you could be working 50 miles away, but living at home, and you that would still constitute as travel.
Where you're working.
Okay.
Has to be okay. 50 miles. Because, yeah, because right now, like, I mean, sometimes I drive 50 miles to one of my
parents'
right.
house. Yeah, exactly.
So I could be living there, and then it's still.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That's how I understand it.
Yeah. But I think it's good to highlight because yeah, like you could still be living at home and have a travel position. And I think a lot of people think like, oh, travel, you have to be going somewhere else. And yes, you can do that, but you don't necessarily have to if there is an opportunity in your hometown and you want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you have any other tips? I mean, I feel like there's so much that's involved in getting into travel therapy and then continuing and being a part of it. And so what other tips that you have for somebody that might be looking into travel therapy?
To be organized, have an Excel spreadsheet, especially if you do what I do and you're licensed in several states, because the worst part is you have to, when you get a new license, most of the states make you send verification from every state, whether you're active in that state or not active in that state.
Oh, wow. You have
to send
okay.
verification to those states. So this is where it's been a challenge for me because with the company I work for, they reimburse you everything you've put towards the license. So I work in, this is my second time in California. So I had to renew my California license, pay however much that was, but I had my receipt. So I worked here a second time for 5 weeks, and then they reimbursed all the money I put into it. So all the money I've paid to their state, I just have to keep the receipts. So right now, I don't know where all my organ receipts. So I still hopefully can find them and get reimbursed for my organ license. But you have to keep everything organized. So like, the organization is the biggest thing because you have to be organized with all the licenses and when everything ends, and keeping that in check is the biggest thing.
Hold on. I want to jump into the organization part because something you mentioned earlier was that you had to write down all the addresses that you had lived and where you had worked as well. So keeping track of where you've been, where you've lived, the places you've lived, and probably like a contact for like a landlord or somebody that was there, plus the facilities that you've worked at and potentially like a supervisor or somebody on site. And then all the state licenses and when they expire and when you have to renew, as well as then I think you also mentioned it earlier too, the continuing education piece too for each state license and if they're different and what constitutes as something that you can put towards one state might not work for another state. And so I can see where that organizational piece is massive. Like without that, so many things could kind of just slip through the cracks.
Right. When it comes to housing, online is a big thing. The Facebook marketplace is go-to thing because there, you know, they're real people. You can see that they have a profile. Like, you can communicate with them. You can do FaceTime, video chat, whatever it is. You can see who they are. You can see that type of stuff. So that's my big tip for the housing part. If you do go the route that you want your own place and you want like a lease, there are places that do 3-month leases, but you have to be very careful because, again, if you say you really like the place and you want to stay there longer than 3 months, like my experience in South Carolina, okay, this place is no longer available in 3 months. Now I don't have a place to live. So you have to be very careful with it. Like, I know a lot of people who do travel therapy and do that type of thing. Or I know even people who have RVs and do that type of thing. I don't have much experience with that myself, but there are many different opportunities and ways you can get through the housing. It is stressful, but in the end, it all works out. Tips about, I didn't really mention this much, but when you're a travel therapist, packing is one of my stressful things. I want to be able to pack up my room or whatever in less than an hour. And now I realize I have too much stuff. And you collect and purchase a lot of things as you travel. So that was the other stressful part about me deciding whether to stay here or go to another location. It was, I really am stressed about packing up and making everything fit in my car, to be honest. So I met another travel PT, and she has her animal, and then she has 3 backpacks, and that's it. And I was like, man, I wish that's what I had. Like, because again, you don't, like, I'm spending more time, either if I'm not sitting doing my work, I'm spending time out exploring. Mm-hmm. So I don't need any fancy things with me. Like, I have a machine because I do some craft projects with me. So the big tip for packing is only bring what you're going to need, because you're either going to be spending most of your time either doing paperwork or you're going to spend it out exploring the area, seeing new things, having new adventures. So you don't really need a lot of stuff. And I've realized that I have more stuff than I need. And it's kind of stressful, the packing of it up, because again, like, if it's going to be spontaneous, we're going to have to go this place from this place to this place. Packing, it's been the worst thing. One of my worst experiences with travel therapy is making everything fit in my car and being able to see and unpack it and
know where everything is. Well, it's funny because when you, like, way back at the beginning of our conversation, when you were talking about the moving portion, I literally wrote down minimalism and I was like, I want to get back to this. So I'm glad that you kind of brought it up. And I was wondering, do you feel like, at least based on your experience within doing travel therapy, that it has made you become more minimalistic? Or do you feel like you're like accumulating things like as you're traveling? So maybe it's actually pushing you the other way, or is it kind of a blend of the two?
I think anybody who knows me that would listen to this would laugh at this, because literally the joke is Emily has too much stuff. Like, you're always bringing too much stuff. You're always, but then I'm like, no, it's me. I'm just always being prepared. Like, so the thing is, like, yes, I've collected more stuff per se, but it's a work in progress, because most of the stuff I collect or am acquiring now is stuff that, like, I've gotten backpacking equipment and like tents and stuff like that, and snowshoes and ice skates. That's stuff that I'm going to use for more experiences and it's beneficial, and like other things like mementos. So like, is where all the places I travel to, I have ornaments. I try to get an ornament from the state or a piece of something that reminds me of that state. So when eventually, maybe one day I'll have a home, I'll be able to have a tree with all of my travels. Like South Carolina, I live next to the Capitol. And when they redid the copper dome of the Capitol, they took the copper and they made ornaments of the Capitol. So I have an ornament of the Capitol made from the copper that was actually from the Capitol.
That's cool.
Or like, I have cotton from actual South Carolina, like from a cotton plant. So like just different things. Or like from California, I have a trolley car. Like, and then I also, because I'm an antique collector, so I have a collection of like old glass milk bottles from the different places I've been. So like, it's a story of my travels. That's the other thing I collect. So like the different states that I go to, I get a cookie cutter of the state.
I love it. That's so cool. And then hopefully when you get to that day that you've worked or / visited every state, then you could have a 50-state party.
I'll cut out every state and then we'll just put it together.
Yeah. And
it'll be a good OT session. We'll make the cookies. We'll work on some fine motor, gross motor, the dexterity, yes. And then we'll decorate them and see. Always thinking like an OT.
Right? And then like problem solving and having to put them together. And it's like, yeah.
Do you remember where these states go?
Yeah, right?
I was like, wait, where's Colorado?
And I know that you kind of have a big goal of something that you hope to accomplish. You want to share with us?
Yes. So my big goal, I get bored easily, to be honest. So I'm always trying to reach out, learn new things, experience new things. And that's why travel therapy has been so good, because it's like, it's the opportunity to see the world. I can, like, literally, if I like get tired and I'm like, okay, after 13 weeks, I just need somewhere else. Like, I can go. And my big goal is to work internationally. And it was crazy because I'd flown out to Wisconsin in October, one of the weekends. I'd been home to my house in 16 months. Hadn't seen my house, hadn't seen anything. And I flew home and I surprised one of my friends in Wisconsin, and I was talking to her dad about the international, and I was like, you know, I would love to work in Italy. Like, that's just one of the many places that I'd love to work in. And it was crazy because, again, being a traveler and being all over the place, mail is just like, you never know when you're going to get it and not get it. So I have all my mail sent to my parents' house. So I get there and I get home Sunday night and I look through the mail and it said, OT opportunity in Italy.
I think I know exactly the company you're talking about too. Yeah.
So like, I was like, oh my goodness, this is like an amazing thing. And like, I was like, this is what I want to do. And it still is. And obviously the opportunity, this isn't the right time. So it was given to someone else and that's fine. So, but I'm like, my big thing, like even on my phone, like it's Italy. Italy is just staying in my life. And I've talked to some other companies. So like where the company I work for right now doesn't do international, I've talked to some companies that do, like they're all military based mm-hmm. contracts, and they do it in the States and in different countries, and they're always sending stuff. And then I'm talking to some recruiter in London, and there's opportunities there. So that's my other thing. It's like, because my big goal, like I had a big goal this year to be in Italy by 2020. So who knows, maybe my goal isn't to be in Italy by 2020, but I'll be in a different country by the end of this year.
Yeah, I think, well, there were two things that I wanted to bring up. I feel like the first thing, and I was actually just interviewing somebody, and we were talking about this being told no. And when you were talking, it just kind of made me think about it. And what she said is, no doesn't mean that it won't happen. It just means maybe not right now. And so I think with like that whole Italy thing, it's like, yeah, okay, somebody else got it, but yeah, it's just not the right time. But that doesn't mean it won't happen. It's just not going to happen right this second. And I think that's just a really good way to kind of think about life and reflect on things that happen to you, that just being told no once doesn't mean it can't happen. It should just give you the motivation to just keep going and continue to pursue your dreams and your goals. And if you keep pushing through, you'll get there at some point. It may not be exactly when you want or how or whatever, but you'll get there.
And that's something I've been working on. I'm not a big no person. And that's also being OT, like we had talked previous about like taking on everything. To even say no, like to people like me who just like go, 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 go. It's like, no, I'm not going to listen to you, like whatever. But it gets you into trouble sometimes. So the power of no just in general, or the power of being told, like if you get an opportunity or it was given to someone else and this is not the right time, it's not a no forever. It doesn't mean that. It's how it's going to shape you and how, oh, you want to get more experiences in this or do this, because your failures, they're not failures. They lead to your successes. They create who you are and what you're going to do. Like,
mm-hmm. Oh yeah, definitely. But the other thing that I wanted to kind of point out when you were talking about like finding a community and meeting people, and what really just kind of sticks out to me and what I've kind of experienced over the past couple years, especially as I've been working as an OT and meeting so many amazing people, whether it's clients that I'm working with, or coworkers, supervisors, that type of stuff, or just other practitioners or students like at conferences. And what I've really realized is sometimes just meeting somebody once, and even if it's like super brief, you might spend 10 or 15 minutes just chatting with this person, all of a sudden, those can turn into long-lasting friendships. And I am seeing that more and more these days, where I just have a chance encounter with somebody, say at AOTA conference. For instance, here's a perfect example. I met up with somebody. We had connected through a Facebook group, and we decided to meet up during conference. I think we chatted for maybe 10 to 15 minutes, and now we get together via Skype because she lives in New York. We get together once a month and do like a little mastermind meeting, and we have stayed in contact this entire time since last April. And we just kind of had this chance encounter of meeting. And so when you were talking about kind of finding that community, I feel like even people that you just meet briefly, they can have a long lasting impact on your life, and you can maintain that friendship regardless of where you are.
And I completely agree with that, because I, again, like finding people and communicating with people, like that's my thing. It's kind of funny because my other like niche, like how I was talking about earlier about my creative consulting that I want to start, I see businesses and I see things in people. I see people's dollar signs, and they may not see it in themselves, but I see when I look at them or they tell me about their passion, I see dollar signs. Like this year, I was listening to podcasts, and it was talking about like creating a word for the year. This year, my word is passion. Everything I do is going to be related to passion. Like I'm even reading a book, and it was funny because the book has like finding your passion, making it fly, not what it says, but something like that. That's me exaggerating things. But like, so my year's passion. So like, I'm looking at all these people and I'm seeing the passion, but then everything you've said today goes full circle, because again, when it gets to the point where I'm more passionate about their product, business, or whatever, then I have to cut back, because I have to keep in mind my hula hoop, and I'm here to promote and help. But again, in the end, you have to be able to take care of yourself.
Exactly. And I love your word. That's a fantastic word. And I am actually, we must have either read the same book or listened to the same podcast or a combination of both, because I have a word for the year as well. And my word for this year is mindset. And my big thing is, and this kind of ties back into what we were talking about previously, is that I've always been go, 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 do, 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 and just working and doing so much stuff that I kind of forget to take care of myself. And my mindset ultimately is the one that is impacted. And so I chose the word mindset for this year to really kind of, and this is going to sound selfish, but really to keep my mindset top of mind, ha ha ha. But then to make sure that anything that I am doing within my daily life, whether personal or professional, always has that mindset in mind, and whether it's going to help keep my mindset a good and positive and progressing mindset, or is it going to have a negative, stressful, limiting effect on my mindset. So yeah, I like our words.
and it's not selfish to say that, because literally, I mean, in the end, we do take care of a lot of people and we do a lot of things for other people, but in the end, you do need to take care of yourself, and you need to look out for yourself, because you're your number one cheerleader. Like, nobody else is going to do it for you. So that was funny that you said that, because I was tossed up between mindset and passion.
No way.
Yes. I mean, I had passion. That was my first one. And I was like, you know, but it's more mindset. And I was like, no, I said passion first. I'm going with passion. I completely relate.
That's awesome. So I usually wrap up the episodes with a question, and I'm curious if it's going to be the same word that you just said, or if you have another word once I ask the question. But I always ask all my guests, if you had one word to describe occupational therapy, what would it be?
One word.
One word.
Inspire or inspiration? Because I want to inspire people to one day say, because of you, I didn't give up.
That's amazing. That is, and I feel like that just encompasses everything that we've talked about and your passion, your drive to help others, whether they're clients, whether they're people that you randomly meet on the side of a mountain or a hike, or it's anything like that. That is amazing. So if people want to reach out to you and maybe have any questions about travel therapy or want to learn more about what you're doing, where can people find you?
I can be found on all the major platforms. You can reach me at my email, which is ebecker815@gmail.com, or my Instagram is emilyannoe815.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, Emily, this has been really, really fun. And I've learned a lot about travel therapy that I did not know before. And I'm totally inspired. And this has been awesome. And I really appreciate you coming on the show today to share your journey and your experience with travel therapy.
And I want to thank you for inviting me to be on the show. Like, this is my first podcast and I literally got super lit up about it. I've been telling everybody about it for weeks.
Hey, before you go, I just wanted to say thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to further the discussion, go to our website, otforlife.com, and join our Facebook group. If you like us, here are three easy ways to let us know. 1, share a podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. 2, leave us a review on iTunes or anywhere this podcast is found. 3, subscribe to us so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. Thanks again. We'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.
And that's the thing. Oh my gosh, I don't know where I'm going with this.
Not where you're living, because you could be working. Hold on. I had this thought. Does that make sense?
I'm trying to think about where to go from there.
That's all you need. You just find a company and you're good to go.
That was a tangent, I think, but I don't know.
Oh, now I can't remember if he's travel therapy or not. He was. I don't think. Is he still? Now I can't remember.